Serve It Cold, Episode 9. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios.
Vera, Vera, pick up the phone before the dogs tear the place apart. Oh, well, sorry about the mess. Listen, everything is going just fine down here. I got the spice and coffee order from Don this afternoon. Nick and Patty's place is well stocked as ever. Narlene was pretty shook up by her adventure, but she's well on her way to getting over it. The Tommies invited us over for cocktails and dinner, and I've already made arrangements with them for her to stay the night. Now all I need to do is convince Narlene. She wanted to come with me on the surveillance thing tonight, but since I knew I would be on the run for the rest of my life, I didn't entertain that thought for even a microsecond. I'll be checking in at the guest house and the Catherine 40 Art Show. I can't wait to get a look at what Cindy Altman's been doing lately. I've always loved her work. This case is such a hardship. I have to look at beautiful art, and I can't afford to buy a single piece. Oh, and I've got to tell you a story about a butcher's knife, a tow truck, and a drunken Popeye the Sailor Man. But that can wait. Honey, I love
Johnny C. Johnny? Johnny? Johnny C? Johnny C? Johnny?
I don't know how long she'd been calling me before I swam to consciousness.
What's wrong? You're crying.
I raised a hand to my cheeks and realized that Narlene was right. I acted like any southern male would. I coughed, sat up straight, and declared, "Allergies. Should have taken something this morning." I pulled out a lens cloth and mopped my face. Narlene, as any southern female would, burrowed right in at the first sign of weakness.
"Yeah, allergies. Tell me something. How is it that everybody we meet calls you by a different name? And who the hell is Creed? I mean, what's up with that?"
I laughed in relief, a question that I actually had an answer for. I dug out a couple of business cards. Narlene rocked forward in her chair to catch enough light to read by as I answered. "Well, part of it is because of my business cards. I have different names for different settings. They're all versions of my real name, like this one right here." I reached over and thumped a card with the whole Jonathan Creedmore speed on it. "They're like street names. If someone comes up and calls me by a name I've only used on the coast, I already know something about that person. Now, Steve calls me Jonathan because he's known me since college and that's what my name was back then. I can't remember who first called me Johnny C, but just about everybody in Crosstown calls me that. Most of the people I know down here I met through Big John Turner, and he called me Creedmore. A lot of people down here think that Creedmore is my last name. That's why Don calls me Creed. Some people down here just call me C. Gojo also calls me that. The Tommies call me Little John as a joke because I was always with Big John, and I was obviously bigger than he was. What can I say? I have a name that just begs for a nickname. A lot of people call me Speed, Speedy, Speedster. Others call me JC, which I guess led to J. I use that one down on the coast now. I really don't know how many nicknames I've got."
"You said the Tommies?"
"That's right. You haven't met Tommy, too. You think my name's hard to get straight."
"Tommy, too?"
she asked, holding up two fingers. "Right. I always write it with the numeral 2 on the odd occasion that I have to write it. But it can be 2, T-O-O. You see, the Tommies used to own the hottest haircutting spot in Atlanta, out in Buckhead. It was named 2 Tommies. So wherever either one went in Atlanta, people would ask either, 'Where's the other Tommy?' or 'Where is Tommy, too?' Pretty soon, even when they were together, people would ask them, 'Which is Tommy too?' By the time they moved to New Orleans, they had the routine down pat. Anytime they meet someone new, the one talking introduces the other as Tommy too. So, a third of the people they know think that one is Tommy too. A third think that the other is Tommy too. And the other third can't figure out what the hell is going on. They do have last names. Sellers and Townley. but I honestly can't remember which is which. It's not that they look alike. You've met Tommy. Well, Tommy, too, is 6 inches taller and African-American, but they are very much alike. They're just the Tommies.
So, you call the one I haven't met Tommy, too?
Sort of. I call each of them Tommy when I'm talking to them individually, and when I'm talking to one, I refer to the other as Tommy, too. When I'm with them both, I just pick one to be Tommy, too, and try to stay consistent. Since I've already been talking to one Tommy today, the other will probably be Tommy, too, in my mind for the rest of this trip. They would much rather you be confused. You'll see, it's their favorite bit. Sort of like, who's on first? I looked for some sign of recognition or puzzlement at the Abbott and Costello reference, but Narlene remained peacefully inscrutable.
Jonathan Speed, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I know I can't be the first to tell you that you are some kind of crazy dude. And it sounds like your friends are pretty crazy, too.
I laughed. Does that include you, friend?
Well, I guess it does, Jonathan. Can I call you that?
Sure, Narlene. I found out a long time ago that you really can't make anyone call you what they don't want to. Besides, I think Jonathan is quite an improvement from motherfucking son of a bitch.
You are never going to let me live that down, are you?
Now, I wouldn't be your friend if I did, would I? Damn, it's almost 6 o'clock. We're late for happy hour. Tommy met us at the door, took Narlene by the hand, and ushered her into the room, leaving me standing in the doorway with one of the Progress grocery muffs in my hands. I closed and locked the door behind me, and followed just in time to hear Narlene say,
"And you must be Tommy, too."
Tommy spun around at me.
"And you must be the spoilsport who won't even let his junior agent have a little fun."
I held the muffaletta out in front of me to ward off attack. Tommy's eyes brightened.
"Okay, you're forgiven for the moment."
He walked off toward the kitchen with his prize. The Tommies had decorated their second-floor apartment in stark contrast to the brightly colored and cluttered shop where they spent their days. The soaring ceilings were close to 20 feet high, and the pastel avocado walls held just a few very large paintings. I've always admired the Tommies for their ability to continue to buy art and yet avoid clutter. When they see something that they love, they buy, decide which wall to put it on, and sell the painting already hanging there. How in hell do they do that? The new paintings on the wall were great. I recognized a large marsh waterscape as the work of John MacDonald. Tommy Two and Narlene emerged from the dining room with cosmopolitans in their hands, with Tommy Two giving a running commentary on the art collection. I motioned to the MacDonald on the wall. I see you guys have been spending time in Bay St. Louis.
Absolutely. Isn't that piece great? He can handle the light we have down here better than anyone. You know, that just after a rain shower kind of light. Thanks for recommending the Baytown Inn. We love it. And Serenity Gallery is wonderful. We've got a cat Fitzpatrick in the living room we just bought from them.
Tommy re-entered the room carrying a cosmopolitan and a can of Diet Coke for me.
Well, Mr. Detective, you didn't notice our really big acquisition, did you?
I was quickly scanning the walls, looking for another new painting when something caught my eye. There in the middle of the living room floor, right in front of the French doors to the balcony, stood an antique barber's chair, a beautiful amalgamation of chrome, porcelain, and green leather. You finally found the perfect chair. It's beautiful.
Thank you, little John. It's an Emil J. Pater, made in Chicago in the mid-20s. Tommy says you're wanting a couple of cuts while you're in town. After supper, we'll take it for a spin.
Supper was simple and delicious. We had antipasti of deconstructed muffaletta, the bread converted into garlic crostini. The main course was fresh fettuccine made that day by Moran's Pastifico in the French market. Tommy, too, tossed it at the table with some very fine olive oil, garlic, cracked pepper, and Parmigiano Reggiano. We finished with the fresh mango ice cream and raspberry sauce that Tommy Two had spent the afternoon making. Narlene was the center of attention during the meal. The Tommies drew out her life's history, and she soon had them laughing their heads off with her defenestration of Jerry's clothes and car keys. I started to describe Jerry's appearance in the afternoon to Tommy, too, but he cut me short.
Oh, I saw him. Tommy called me right after he called you. It was a hoot.
Narlene, how did you ever get messed up with these guys?
Tommy, it was a mixture of youthful arrogance and raw stupidity.
I was proud of the girl, and I was pretty sure that Goat would have been, too. After supper, I was ushered to the seat of honor in front of the open French doors. Tommy shaped up my beard and snipped away at my hair, while Tommy, too, caught me up on all the latest quarter gossip. When Tommy announced that he was finished and I rose from the chair, I heard a gasp from Narlene. Tommy, too, lifted a large oval mirror for me, and I could see that I was not only trimmed, but that I had aged maybe 20, well, at least 10 years. My black hair was now steel gray, my beard now salt and pepper. My mustache was light gray and matched my new, bushier eyebrows. It's great, Tommy. It'll wash out?
Sure, it's just spray, but it is a bit more adhesive than what I used to use. I'd suggest you hit it with just a tiny bit of shampoo in the morning and just let it be streakier tomorrow. If you end up looking too much like a zebra, I can touch it up in a minute or two.
I turned toward Narlene, whose mouth was still open in surprise. What do you think? Do I look different enough to tail someone who's met me several times back in Catherine without them recognizing me?
Jonathan, I don't even recognize you. Tommy, you did an incredible job.
Yes, he did. Of course, he's been practicing for 30 years. We met during a regional theater production of Othello back in Atlanta. I was spearholder number 3, and Tommy was doing makeup trying to make some blonde college boy look like Othello.
Tommy finished brushing stray hairs from my shoulders and said,
There, that's all I can do for you. If you want acting lessons to go with the look, you'll have to talk with spearholder number 3.
I think I'll just improvise tonight. Speaking of which, it is time I was going. Narlene started to rise, but I waved her back into her chair and took a seat next to her. Narlene, I'm sure you'd be welcome to stay here with the Tommies tonight. You'll find their guest bedroom gets a lot less street noise than upstairs does.
By all means, Narlene. We'd love to have you stay at the Shea Tommy Bed and Breakfast. In fact, we might have a chance of Tommy actually cooking breakfast if you stay.
Not much of a chance, but I'm willing to chase Tommy out of the building and not let him in until he brings us back croissants. Does that count?
I'd love to stay if you don't mind, but I have to go back upstairs to get my new clothes.
I'm heading that way now. Walk with me. On the stairs, Narlene said,
Okay, Jonathan. Why did you let me get so worried about staying alone when you had already hatched this plan of me staying with the 2 Tommies?
Well, at the time, you only knew the Tommies as one small, quiet man who runs a souvenir shop. Now you know them as 2 funny, generous men who will really enjoy spending time with you. They'll also do a good job of protecting you. You're not the first waif I've left on their doorstep.
So, now I'm a waif?
I stooped over more on the staircase and put a hand to my back. Oh, just be kind and humor an old man, would you?
Well, Johnny C., I already thought you were an old man before Tommy got hold of you. Now, you're ancient.
Oh, what happened to Jonathan?
Waif! Waif happened to Jonathan, ancient man!
We eventually made it up the grand spiral of stair, in spite of the laughing, and gathered our things. Back on the landing outside the Tommy's apartment, I gave her my spare cell phone. My cell is the first auto dial. Call me any time. If I don't answer, leave voicemail. Use this to call home or anybody. Talk as long as you like. If I can't get through to you on this phone, I'll call the Tommies. Stay safe. These guys have a great balcony, but stay off of it unless you have your hood and the lights are out. They know the ropes. She hugged me and kissed me on my ancient cheek.
You'll be safe too, Jonathan.
Down the stairs, I pushed through the door and felt the cooling breeze coming from the river. Once again, I felt a feeling of homecoming. Back on the job. Back on the streets of New Orleans.
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at dancingcatstudios.com. Yep, this was a short episode, and we're sorry we don't have more this time out, but we do have a real treat that we hope will make up for it. On July 11th, 2007, Michelle Malone performed at Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia, and I cannot begin to tell you what a pleasure it was to hear her perform live. She owned the stage in a charming and self-deprecating way and displayed a tremendous range, from mad electric guitar skills to exquisite and compelling acoustic ballads. All Michelle's music is very fine, especially her latest album, Sugarfoot, and it is all available off her site, michellemalone.com. If you ever have a chance to see her perform live, seize onto it with both hands. It's worth every effort. And now, by permission, the acoustic version of Where is the Love? Live.
I play this song for the podcasters here tonight. Thank y'all for your help. Love is like a stray rebellious bird, calling and you never hear a word. It's not the feather flutter of song, it's just the wind swirling around. Love is like a stray rebellious bird. Turn away and then she will appear. When the morning wing will flicker near. It's like the love will come to you when you've given up your due. She wants only who does not want her. Where is the love? Where is the love? Don't act like you don't know me. Mm-hmm. seen you than today. So when the thing she's in your palm, you'll open it to find she's gone. Then you cry more than the
Yeah.